in order to learn new things, you absolutely need to have a growth mindset, because some of the things that we're learning today are diametrically opposed to what we learned 6 months ago or 10 years ago. You know, I've got 3 degrees, and I could tell you that things that I learned and paid a lot of money to learn and worked very hard to learn were proven to be absolutely wrong. Not instantly, but over time. And part of the reason they became wrong is our world changed, our environment changed. So what worked in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s isn't going to work in the 2020s.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everybody. This is Ben Morton, and welcome to episode 39 of the podcast. In this episode, we are joined by Ira Wolf, who is often described as a millennial trapped in a baby boomer body, and also as the world's first chief Googleization officer. He ranks in the top 5 global thought leaders in the future of work and HR on Thinkers 360. Ira is the president of Poised for the Future company and the founder of Success Performance Solutions. He is a prolific keynote speaker and author of multiple best-selling books, including Recruiting in the Age of Googleization. Ira hosts his own podcast, which you should definitely go and check out, Geeks, Geezers and Googleization, and is on a personal mission to unlock the secrets of human adaptability, ensuring that no one is left behind in the fastest period of change in history. In this episode, Ira and I spoke about many different things, including the future of work, whether or not he thinks that the COVID-19 pandemic is a one-off freak event, or something that is here for the foreseeable future and something we're going to have to learn to live with. We talk about operating in a VUCA world. There's the acronym again, folks. And also why he believes that adaptability, or AQ, is one of the most in-demand skills for leaders right now. So, without any further delay, please enjoy this fascinating conversation with Ira Wolf. Hey Ira, a very warm welcome to the podcast. Before we get into the questions, let me just ask, how are you doing today? And actually, whereabouts in the world are we talking to you from?
Hey, thanks, Ben. It's great to be here. I am in the U.S., more specifically in the northeastern part of Pennsylvania, for listeners who know where that is. And I'm doing well. We're doing pretty well. Got my first trip underway a few days ago, and we're getting back into... Well, we'll talk about what normal is going to look like, but we're getting back to there.
Yeah, I'm sure we will. And it's getting back to normal is interesting, right? It's something that trips off of all of our tongues very, very easily. We can often be, I think, kind of careless or quite habitual with our language. But as you said, we will talk about this shortly. But actually, for me anyway, kind of getting back to what was normal really isn't my aspiration. Kind of, I want to get back to better if we can.
Well, we'll definitely be talking about that, because a lot of people are, you know, as you said, I think was careless, and I was careless in my choosing my words there too, of getting back to normal. We've never in history been able to go back, and we hope we don't go back. We don't want to go backwards. We want to go forward, and we want to be better, and we want to be stronger, and learn from our mistakes. And that's going to be challenging, because there's a lot of people who do just want to go back to the way it was. And just the concept of normal, when you think about it, what was normal? You know, if you go back and say we'd like to go back to the way it was in 2019 because the economy was good and we were busy and going to concerts and shows and family and traveling and vacations, even to the gym, you know, without much thought. And yet that wasn't normal for everyone. I mean, there's, you know, we certainly were exposed to 2020, a lot of social injustice, racial injustices, inequities in the workplace. We still had famine. We still had war. We still had terrorism. You know, normals is a perception that we have. And normal for some people was excellent, and for other people it wasn't so good. And so not everybody wants to go back to normal.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's just rewind ever so slightly before we get into discussing some of what you've just mentioned. Can you just start off, Ira, just by telling us a little bit about yourself, please? Kind of what is it you're up to and doing these days, and a bit of the background that got you there, if you don't mind?
Yeah, for sure. My company is Success Performance Solutions, and where I spend most of my waking hours, or not waking hours, but at least my day hours, especially for the last year, has been working within the business. But a passion project of mine, which came out of, I've always enjoyed talking about change, thinking about change. Some people have called me a Renaissance man, just of my journey, my life's journey. But I did a TED Talk about 5 years ago, and it was about change. It was about the future just the future, and it was about how fast things were changing. Ended up from that experience, wrote a book, which became Recruiting in the Age of Googleization. So over that time span, I've been doing a lot of work on, you know, what the future of work, what the future workplace would look like, and most importantly, how individuals would get there. And within that frame, a lot of people are struggling. And so over the last, I'd say, 12 to 18 months, a passion project of mine has become studying adaptability, how people can become more adaptable. So, finally we're able to get back in the swing of things and, get a little bit of a personal life that we didn't have we had a lot of personal life. Loved being locked up and with my wife. We became pandemic buddies. Couldn't have thought of anybody else I'd rather be locked up with. We also missed family and we missed traveling and missed doing some other things. So we're getting there.
Yeah, good stuff. I'm going to love to talk to you in a few minutes as well about adaptability. That's definitely on the question list. But I'd like to kick off, if I can, just talking to you about VUCA, that acronym, and the world that we're living in. Because I know that's something else you've got a lot of experience in. And this is kind of a real passion project of mine as well, because I think it's interesting in the sort of my first career was in the military, and certainly my view that the military have been operating in a VUCA world for decades, kind of centuries even, certainly since sort of men first took up arms against each other. But the term, I think, really started creeping into the business world, right, probably over the last 10 years, and then COVID kind of hit in 2019, and suddenly everyone was talking about VUCA and kind of what does it mean? How do we respond to it? Just kind of wondering sort of what's your sort of take on VUCA? Do you think the world will become less VUCA as hopefully we all kind of emerge out of the other side of COVID, or is that the world that's here to stay? Kind of what's your thoughts on that, Ira?
What a great question. And you're absolutely right. The VUCA was actually introduced to the military, or the military introduced it to us about 30 years ago. I believe it came from the U.S. military, and they recognized that after the Berlin Wall came down, that the forces of life were changing, and enemies were changing, and how we defended ourselves or how we supported ourselves from, defended ourselves from enemies, but also fortified ourselves. The world was going to be different. We were no longer likely going to be in war with nation states, but terrorism, and then even more abstract things like climate change. So they recognized we were going to have, it wasn't going to be so definitive that it was going to be, us and them, but the them was going to be, much broader. So, and just for the listeners, VUCA represents volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. So when you combine all that, it's, unexpected change, pretty, fast, such as I think everybody now has a feeling of what VUCA was before. Many people's lives were pretty steady or at least they thought they were predictable. And we certainly had events, natural disasters, and terrorism, and some other things that might have happened to us, but ultimately things rebounded and we just continued on the way it was. With volatility, it's just happening more often, more frequent, more intense, which means that things are much more uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. So that's what it meant. I don't know when who the first person was that introduced it to the business world that took it out of military. But in thinking about strategy, I first wrote an article about that in 2006. And then it ebbed and flowed and people got it and go, that was interesting. But I don't know a better acronym that could have described our world in 2020. And somebody asked me a great question the other day of what did I think the world was going to look like 12 months from now?
Right.
And I said, it's still evolving. You know, we talked about hybrid workforce and, you know, workplace, and it was related to what the workplace was going to be. But I said the only thing that was predictable was that we're still going to have VUCA, which answers your question. Do I think we're going to have less? We're going to have more of it. I mean, our world going forward, for many reasons, is the only constant's going to be VUCA, and a lot of people are very uncomfortable with that.
Yeah, and what do you think that means for leaders and organizations, Ira? And as far as you're aware, are there any particular tools, approaches, tactics that leaders can adopt to help them successfully lead their organizations and teams in the world we're in?
Well, that certainly leads us right into adaptability. Adaptability before, and we can dig into a little bit about even what adaptability is, but people talked about being flexible. The word of the year for 2020 was resilience, which is the ability to bounce back. There's a lot of talk about grit, especially with Angela Duckworth's research over the last few years, and grit's about perseverance. So certainly we've seen that demonstrated quite well over the last year. Not everybody, there's obviously people that are struggling with that. Not everybody, you know, has grit, and not everybody is resilient. But for the most part, the world continued to move on despite being quarantined. People like you and I were continuing to work. We had things to do, you know, manufacturing, distribution, logistics. There's companies that are booming. There's people that are booming. In the U.S., I don't know what the rate is elsewhere, but the U.S., the savings rate, we were a country in debt personally, and the savings rate went sky high last year because people stopped spending money. So, there's a lot of good things that came out of it, and that certainly signifies that there's grit and resilience. But the problem is moving forward. The environment, it's sort of like Rip Van Winkle, or if anybody remembers the movie Shawshank Redemption.
Great movie.
Yeah, and when, drawing a blank on the character's name, but, you know, after 50 years gets out of prison, and walks into the world, and it's like how fast the world has changed over those time. And now that's going to happen in an instant. So the number one skill that seems to be coming up in some well-respected research and studies, whether it's from the World Economic Forum, McKinsey, Boston Consulting Group just released something this week, Deloitte, if it's not the number one leadership skill, it's in the top five of every single list. Is the ability to adapt. You know, and I'm going to take it a step further. It's not only a leadership skill that leaders need to be proficient in adaptability, but they also have to help their individuals, the people in their community, the people that are employed by them, because it's the individuals that need to become more adaptable. I mean, leaders need to know how to lead in a VUCA world. But the struggle is, how do you get individuals more comfortable with change, with the constant state of change? So we talk a lot about the end game is not to score high in to raise your AQ, your adaptability quotient, which is, you know, now measurable, but it's to help give people the courage to try new things. And the more you try something and you succeed, just as a child does, they become more confident. And the more confident they become, the more hope they see. Because if you're confident in what you do, then the world's not so dystopic and it's not so VUCA. Ultimately, I look at it as adaptability as the pathway, as the roadway to help people gain the courage to become more confident and ultimately, emotionally, to be more hopeful.
Yeah, it's really interesting, Ira. As you was chatting there, when you describing adaptability and helping people to have the courage to try new things and all of that good stuff. It got me thinking about probably, again, for the last 5, 7, 10 years, so many big corporate organizations have had the aspiration to be innovative or have had kind of innovation as one of their core values. And I think, truth be told, lots of companies have probably failed to truly embed that value. Because I think one of the things you need for innovation, right, is for it to be okay to fail. And that just doesn't exist in lots of companies. But I think it's really similar, like being okay to try and fail, really resonated with what you were describing as adaptability. So I almost wonder if the world we've been in for the last 14 months is suddenly that catalyst or that burning platform that's going to force organizations to be more adaptable and kind of help make it okay for people to try things. And we probably shouldn't say fail, right? Because if you try something, it doesn't work, as long as you learn from it, it's not a failure. But it just feels like the current world might be that burning platform that really enables us to change and adapt, perhaps.
You know, you're so right. I just saw this last night on the news. You're probably familiar with Post-it notes, and most of the listeners are probably familiar with what a Post-it note is. Post-it notes, one of the biggest corporate failures ever in history.
Yeah.
We're not talking about a business model, but, you know, ultimately, it was designed to be a glue for space. Something that was not, you were not able to peel off, but basically sort of like the Gorilla glues, the crazy glues, you know, that once you put it together, you can't get it apart.
Yeah.
And, you know, ultimately they found that not only did it stick, but you could remove it and it'll stick again and remove it and stick again. But that was not the intent. That was a failure. That was a failed experiment. And it revolutionized, it really took 3M, mining and manufacturing. That's what they were in. That's what they built equipment for and built products for, was mining and manufacturing. The Post-it note is a failure. So you don't want to fail. You don't want your company to fail. You don't want other people to fail. But you want them to be able to have the ability to make mistakes and learn from them.
Yeah.
And over the years, maybe 40 to 50 years, and especially, I'm old enough to have lived through the 70s and 80s when, the Japanese manufacturing became the ultimate, platform, the ultimate model. And you became incredibly efficient and zero tolerant of mistakes.
Yeah.
So from a productivity standpoint and a quality standpoint, that was an excellent pathway. The problem is it squeezed out innovation. So, we're talking about innovation, or another one of the five abilities in adaptability is growth mindset, is how do you become more comfortable with making a mistake, exploring, being more curious, being that child. You certainly don't want the child touching a hot stove. We've got a under 2-year-old grandson who comes over twice or 2 or 3 times a week that we watch. And, ultimately, we got to watch everything he does. He's not afraid to go catch the bee, when we're outside. He's not afraid to touch things that are hot. So there's a fine line between not fatally hurting yourself, but there's lessons to be learned. And especially in corporate and business life, even in careers, I mean, people have to be more open to try new things, to learn new skills than they were before. And, as the World Economic Forum, and this was before the pandemic, I'm almost afraid to see what the figure would be today. Before the pandemic, estimated that by 2030, there would be 375 million people left behind. And that's a further extent than just being in poverty. That means, basically out of a job and homeless, because they don't have even the most basic skills. They don't even have the most basic ability to adapt. So part of our goal, part of our mission, is to help people not be left behind. And 2020 just accelerated that. And there's a lot of people that are in danger that, going back to what we talked about in the beginning and sort of careless of us to talk about going back to normal, even by saying that, that there's going to be a sense of normalcy and not have people understand that it's going to be a VUCA. You know, normal is VUCA. And how do you get people comfortable or courageous enough and confident enough to live in that environment? And people like you and me are much more adaptable. I mean, that's we're okay with that. But you think about all the frontline workers, the less educated, and that's part of one of the reasons for so much social unrest. They don't welcome the robot. They don't understand that the robot can enhance their life. And not all, but in many times, of how do you work side by side, or how do you support the robot and the robot supports you, and not necessarily a robot, but machines and AI. And some people just don't get it. They just want to go back and have, you know, go back to the agricultural industrial world.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Ira, kind of, I've heard you kind of mention a few of these, and I've spotted them because I know what they are. But for the sake of everybody listening, I know you talk about sort of five core competencies that go with adaptability. Would you mind just kind of running us through those quickly for the benefit of everybody listening? Because I think it's a really, really interesting list you've got there.
Yeah, absolutely. So the adaptability quotient, and we call it AQAI because some of the platform is based on AI. But the research, which was not based on AI, I think research was just based on old methodologies and studies through multiple universities and some companies, identified 15 dimensions, and the 15 dimensions were broken up into three areas. One was ability. That's a personal ability that we have, and we'll come back to that in a second. The other was character, five personality traits that could impact how people accepted or pushed back on change. And then the final one was the environment we live in. And especially working within a company, does a company create an environment that supported innovation and growth? Did it provide the emotional support and team support? So, but that's a little bit out of your control, out of an individual's control, other than leaving the company or changing jobs. So there were five abilities that people can learn. These are not static. These are not gifts that you had. These are not maybe genetic, but they could be nurtured as well. And we mentioned three of them already. We mentioned grit, which is passion and perseverance. That's what keeps you going. We talked about resilience, and that's the ability to bounce back. But grit and resilience don't help you grow. They help you grow, but not alone. It's not standalone. Mm-hmm. Because in addition to that, there's three other factors. One was growth mindset, and for, you know, in the short time we have, I would just suggest look up growth mindset, look up Carol Dweck, D-W-E-C-K. You'll find tons and tons of articles, some I've written. I've written a few, but there's been people that have really specialized in that area about the fixed and growth mindset. But there's the two other factors are really interesting, and these are probably the two more difficult ones to change, but are necessary. One is mental flexibility. And mental flexibility is the ability to have two opposing thoughts in your head at the same time. I describe it as being able to watch CNN and MSNBC and Fox News simultaneously, and not be ready to blow up, but to read through the lines and stand in the shoes of the opposing party or the opposing thought, and trying to make sense of it, kind of trying to see the world from two different sides. And, you know, that enriches you. So mental flexibility is challenging, obviously, for a lot of people. We have a lot of, people that are making binary choices. And then the final one is super interesting because we keep talking about what one of the skills that we need to move forward and to grow is learning, continuous learning, that, having a four-year degree doesn't accomplish much anymore because the world is completely changed by the time you even achieve it. So degrees and experience are important, but the ability to unlearn the bad behavior. So we need to continue learning new information, but also learn to apply it. We need to apply new behaviors, which is relatively easy. You can teach somebody to do almost anything, but oftentimes that conflicts with the way we used to do it. Even an example of what happened last year and how it failed and then what we learned. We went home and we said, oh, wonderful, we can still meet by Zoom. But we then had to understand that Zoom is a digital format. It's not an analog. You couldn't conduct your meetings exactly the same way because the dynamics changed, the environment changed, how people responded. We no longer were sitting next to somebody in a 3D environment or a 4D environment, but all of a sudden it was a 2D environment. It was almost a step back. So the problem is that we had to learn how to apply, how to utilize something like Zoom in our new environment. And the more people tried to apply, just turn Zoom into a meeting technology, a meeting software, the more fatiguing, the more challenging, and the less effective it was. So mental flexibility and unlearning are definitely the, you know, two skills that most of us are unfamiliar with. Some of us were more adept at it, but those are really future skills.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by the unlearning concept, Ira. Like, is there such a thing as unlearning, or is unlearning a result of mental flexibility and learning, in so much as, I don't know if this is the same, but sort of certainly in terms of habits that we've installed. A lot of the science almost suggests that you can't actually delete a habit, right? Because what it essentially is a strongly connected series of parts in the brain. So actually all you can do is create a new, stronger connection, a new, stronger habit that replaces the old one. Is unlearning something that's very, very distinct in your view, or is it kind of, let's say, an output of learning and really good mental flexibility?
Yeah, that's so interesting. You know, I don't have the science. I know the basics, and I read what you read as well. So from a scientific basis, maybe we don't unlearn. Although, as you were talking, I'm thinking about all the things I used to do that I don't know how to do anymore, or that I forget that I know how to do. So the question is, did I truly unlearn that, or did I, you know, what's the difference between unlearning and forgetting? I often joke, you know, unlearning is not doing a brain dump. Unlearning is not an on-off switch, which is, I think, is what you referenced. Emotionally, you know, my emotional response is that humans can unlearn, you know, and whether it's changing their behavior because they learn new things, and, you know, is that unlearning the old way, or is that just, you know, adapting? So I think we can get caught up in the semantics. But the one thing that I would say is that one of the analogy or one of the metaphors that I talk about is, think about your hard drive. And for those of you who have ever done a defrag, that's probably the closest analogy I can think, is that, you know, over time you have all these bits and bytes and files, and they get distributed, sort of like my desk. You know, you have multiple piles all over the place, and then finally one day you sit down and you need room, so you get rid of the duplicates, you get rid of the temporary files, all the post-it notes, all the things you jotted down on a piece of paper. So you end up cleaning house. You get rid of all that stuff. And, you know, but ultimately then you can reorganize and you refile and you put things in order. And all of a sudden you have all this space to acquire new information, and it's not as cluttered. And you therefore can apply what you learned and develop a new behavior, a new habit. You know, and it takes people to say 21 days, 30 days to have that new habit. It's not something that you go to school. You know, you don't take a class for 8 hours and come out and you got your certification.
Yeah.
You know it. You may know the data. Intellectually, you may know it, but it's not ingrained. So in order to do that, you're absolutely right. In order to go through that process, understand what I need to delete, what I need to refile, what I should keep, what I might need in the future. And then in order to learn new things, you absolutely need to have a growth mindset. And you absolutely need to have mental flexibility, because some of the things that we're learning today are diametrically opposed to what we learned 6 months ago or 10 years ago or 20 years ago. You know, I've got 3 degrees, and I could tell you that things that I learned and paid a lot of money to learn and worked very hard to learn were proven to be absolutely wrong. Not instantly, but over time. And part of the reason they became wrong because is our world changed, our environment changed. So what worked in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s isn't going to work in the 2020s.
Yeah, that makes total sense.
Yeah, so in learning, they're all integrated. And in order to unlearn, in order to have mental flexibility, in order to have a growth mindset, you do need grit and resilience. Because there's going to be setbacks. You're going to try new things. You're going to learn something and fail at it. You're going to learn something and may find that wasn't what you wanted. You're going to make changes in your life. You're going to hear things. So you need grit and resilience to kind of go through the stages of adaptability. But in and of themselves, they don't help you grow stronger. There's a, and you can look this up. I did not come up with this, but Nassim Taleb, who came up with the Black Swan, and he was talking about the financial markets, has a concept called anti-fragile. And I really love the concept. And I'm not going to go into the financial parts of it, but because I don't understand them either. But he talks about, again, why resilience is important, why being, he talks about being robust too, that we need to have a live more intently, more purposely. But if you think about a cup, let's say your coffee cup, a glass cup, and you drop it on the floor, it likely will shatter. Now, sometimes it doesn't because, and especially if it's a plastic cup, it'll bounce. And mm-hmm. that's the bouncing back. And that's what resilience is. Even grit, even if you threw it down in the ground 10 times, and harder each time, and it does not break, it didn't become better. What anti-fragile is saying that if imagine that each time the cup fell out of your hands, fell down to the ground, and bounced, that each bounce, the molecules rearranged. They didn't break, but the molecules rearranged and became stronger. The bond became stronger. It became a bigger cup. It grew from an 8-ounce cup to a 12-ounce cup. What would that mean to our ability to adapt? And so the anti-fragile concept or model is grit and resilience is necessary to move through all the stages, to go through each bounce. And there will be more bounces we have to go through. But how do we learn from those? How do we grow bigger, better, and stronger?
Yeah, okay.
And that's where they all interlap. I'm not sure you can become adaptable or as adaptable as you need to be without being proficient in each of those. And that's where our focus is.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think that might be a nice lead-in to probably the final thing I wanted to ask you, Ira, in that I saw in one of your videos or a podcast, which I guess some people on the surface might think this is slightly controversial, but I think the title was Resilience is for Sissies, right? Kind of what you're just talking about now, is that kind of what sits behind that concept? And can you tell us a little bit about that in a few minutes? Because I found it really interesting watching that video.
It was definitely controversial, especially in the world we live in today, because people equated sissies with the opposite of being a bully. So yeah. Although it was a great topic, I've sort of swayed away from that because it did create some negative connotations. But it did get the message across. And the fact is that again, we needed resilience. We need to bounce back. But just resilience alone was an escape because you're going to bounce back to what? Think of this. People say, we can't wait to go back to normal, but then they're going back to their workplaces, especially in the U.S. and some other places, and hopefully in the U.K. shortly and around the world. People will go back to their offices, but some people don't want to go back to their offices. When they go back to the offices aren't going to look the same. Many have been shut down. Some are going to be smaller spaces. What the workspaces are, the people, they can't wait to go back and be with their coworkers, but not all the coworkers are going to come back, and if they come back, they may not be there working on the same days. You may be working in your office, but on Zoom calls with people who are still working from home or working from around the world. So the reality is that resilience was good, that you emotionally rebounded, but the world changed. And, so it was basically resilience is good, but it is for sissies because you will be bullied by VUCA, you know, down the road.
Amazing. Ira, thank you so much for your time. It's been absolutely fantastic chatting to you, getting your insights and thoughts on the current world and what's coming up. So thank you so much for your time. Before you go, if people want to find out more about you and your work or connect with you, what's the best way for them to do that, please?
Well, you certainly can visit my, I have a couple of websites, but my company website, as I suggested, was successperformancesolutions.com. I do have a personal website, which is irawolf.com. That's IRAWOLFE.com. If you type Googleization or you type in my name, Ira Wolf, just in the Google, I will show up, and you can certainly pick up a copy of my book, Recruiting in the Age of Googleization.
Amazing. Ira, thank you so much once again, and have a great day, whatever you're going on to do next.
Hey, thanks very much, Ben. Appreciate it. Stay safe.
You too. Take care. I hope you found that conversation valuable, folks, but most importantly, I really hope that you're able to go away and make some small positive changes as a result. If you did get value from this episode, then please do rate, review, and subscribe via iTunes, as it really does enable us to keep bringing you more and more interviews with fantastic leaders and subject matter experts. Do also visit ben-morton.com, where you can connect with me, find out more about my leadership mentoring and team development work, along with details of all of my online programs via the tools and resources page. That's it for this episode. See you again in the next one very soon, and lead on.